you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls.
Hour number three of the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. No KD today, no KD this week. He is out on vacation, hopefully down there on South Padre Island. They're getting a little better weather than what we're getting here in Central Texas. Be careful out there. Hopefully you are not on the roads, but if you are, please get home safely. It is dark, it is dreary, it is nasty outside. Y'all stay safe. Quick programming notes. Texas baseball's game scheduled for 6:30 tonight has been canceled. That news dropped a few hours ago, but if you had not heard that yet, I mean, if you take a look outside, probably no surprise, but Texas was scheduled to take on Rice tonight at the Dish. That game will not happen, and it will not be made up. So Rod B and I will be holding down the fort until 7 o'clock here on the Horn. And Rod B, you know what that means.
Give it to me.
We haven't had a BK Lounge on a Tuesday in a long, long time. We've got to bring back Hypothetical Tuesday tonight.
Oh, even without KD?
Even without KD.
Wow.
No, it hurts.
I don't think we've done this
since the start of baseball season.
Honestly, I don't know if we've done it in 2021 at all.
We did it at the start.
Did we?
I think.
I don't remember.
But it hasn't happened often.
Man.
Because of Texas basketball and then Texas baseball, right?
Yep.
The Longhorns have played on pretty much every Tuesday.
Hey, you know I love Hypothetical Tuesdays. I'm a big fan.
So that's coming back at 6:30.
Right. So, nice.
Definitely set your alarms for that.
Okay. I got to get my mind right then.
I'm giving you an hour and a half worth of notice.
Yeah, it's always something freaky that kind of warps my mind, distorts it somehow. So I'll be ready to go.
There we go. I love that. So that's coming up at 6:30. Of course, Rod's rant of the day coming up at 5:30. But something that's happening all day long, Rod B, Vince Young's birthday.
Amen.
The legendary Shout out. Lifetime Longhorn turns 38 today. Happy birthday to VY. You know, at the start of the pandemic last year, we did our greatest Big Three Texas Longhorn of all time bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Vince Young won.
Of course.
Our fan votes.
We knew that was going
to
happen.
Was able to take down Earl Campbell in the finals. Is he the greatest Texas Longhorn football player of all time?
Man, I hate to give it to him over Earl.
It's tough. I mean, you've got a few guys that you could choose from.
I'm going Earl.
Okay.
For me, just for me personally. But I'm a lovey blue guy, so I love Earl for more than just the Texas thing.
I mean, there's no bad option there, right?
Yeah, and I know I'm being biased because this is supposed to be about Texas and what happened at Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if anybody ever ran the football like Earl Campbell.
Yeah, even if you keep it to just Texas, you can make a damn strong case that Earl Campbell is the best player to ever come through here.
Man, I'm going with Earl.
Right? I mean, Earl Campbell, Ricky Williams, Vince Young, you choose any of those guys.
I feel bad when I just go Earl because, yeah, you feel like I'm disrespecting Ricky and VY, but, I mean, that's three of the football Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
And some people would say that's three of the Texas sports Mount Rushmore in some people's minds.
I mean, the field is named after two of those guys.
You know?
And the third guy brought you your most recent national championship.
Come on now.
And the only one you've won since 1970.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you could argue for those three guys. Hell, you could throw Tommy Nobis and Bobby Lane in there, and you wouldn't get too much argument from some of the old heads
there, too. Bobby Lane.
Yeah. A lot of Longhorn legends. But VY celebrating his 38th birthday today. And Rod B, I compiled a list. I definitely want to get your thoughts and your favorite moments.
I got some. I don't know if I got to 10 like
okay.
you, but I got, yeah, I'm going to see if all of mine matches up with yours.
So I've got my top 10 games for Vince Young during his time on the 40 Acres. So not specifically moments, right? Not just certain plays, but just the top 10 single game performances for VY during his time at UT.
Okay.
Starting with number 10.
Okay.
I think everybody knows what number one's going to be. I don't have to bury the suspense there. But we'll start with number 10. 2003, VY's redshirt freshman season. I threw this one in there because I felt like I needed an 03 game in there. Texas at Texas A&M. 46-15, the Longhorns route the Aggies to close out the regular season. That game was really a said B game.
Mm-hmm.
He ran for 283 yards in that one. But I'll give VY some love. A redshirt freshman on the road in College Station to lead Texas to a blowout victory. I mean, VY only threw 8 passes in the game. He had 97 yards passing and a touchdown. No turnovers. Also ran for 90 yards and a score as well. But that was more of a said B game. But I'm giving VY some love for doing that in College Station in his first ever trip down there against the Aggies.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. That backfield, man. VY and said B in the same backfield. I know that wasn't the national title backfield, but that's still a nasty all-time great backfield.
Not fair. Number 9 on my list, we go to 2004. Texas at Kansas.
Uh-huh. That's
the
on
Longhorns
my list.
Longhorns dealing with a scare from the Kansas Jayhawks. KU actually led Texas 23-20 in the final minute. Texas was number 6 in the country. Kansas, they weren't as bad as current Kansas.
They weren't even close. They were actually competitive when Mangino was there, right?
Yeah, but this was like before they were really, really good.
Okay.
Like, I think they were 5-5 going into that game. So they were decent, but Texas was still a multiple score favorite, and this game should not have been that close. The play that sticks out, the 4th-and-18 conversion by VY. In the final minute, Texas down by 3. They needed the conversion to keep the drive alive. VY picks it up with his legs and ultimately leads Texas to a game-winning scoring drive.
Is that when they had the big offensive pass, the pass interference call? I mean?
Yes.
It was a pass interference. A
couple of plays before.
Before that.
Put away behind the 8-ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But VY, 22 of 40, 289 yards through the air, 1 passing touchdown, also added 114 rushing yards and a rushing score as well. Number 8 for me, 2004, at Texas Tech.
Ooh.
A 51-21 win for Texas. Pretty efficient day at the office for VY. How about this? 10 of 15 through the air, 142 passing yards, 1 passing score, no turnovers, 158 rushing yards, and 4 rushing touchdowns, which was tied for a career high for VY.
He always had those chunk yardage plays.
Man. It just felt like at least once a half. Forget once a game. Once a half he was going to break one with his legs.
Yep, every time.
And in Lubbock in 04, he broke a few with his legs. Number 7 for me, the 2005 Big 12 title game, 70-3 win over Colorado. It was a short day of work for Vince Young.
I was going to say he wasn't even.
He was pretty good, though.
No, he was awesome.
14 of 17, 193 yards, 3 passing touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown for Vince Young in a very limited amount of work because Texas had that game over in the second quarter.
That was an unworthy adversary that day.
Yes, they were. Number 6, boy, VY, I mean, he pulled the rabbit out of his hat a number of times on the 40 acres.
Oh, I know where you're going.
But against Oklahoma State, he really found a way to make magic happen. We've got both OSU comebacks on my list.
I'll say which one.
We'll start with 04. in Austin, Texas down 35-7.
That's amazing.
They score 49 unanswered to win 56-35. VY, of course, spearheading the comeback. He had a rough first half, threw 2 picks early on, ended up going 18 of 21, 278 yards through the air. Also added 123 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown as well, as Texas was able to come back and get that win.
That was crazy.
Were you on the sidelines for that one?
I was not on the sidelines.
Oh, you were in the league
one.
For that one.
Yeah. That was unbelievable, man. That was just one of those things like, that's no way he's going to. When it was happening, he's like, okay. They're gonna make this an actual game. I think they were gonna come out and end up beating them in a commanding fashion.
49 like, unanswered. credit VY in the offense, but credit the defense too.
That's true.
For not allowing a point in the second half when it felt like any double. Oklahoma State score would have hurt.
Came back and blew them out.
Yeah, they won by 21 after being down by 28.
Blew them out. I was like, how does that happen?
I mean, that's like what the Chiefs did to the Texans
a
couple of years ago.
Dude, I was just thinking the same thing, unfortunately, but I'm glad you said it and not me.
Great minds think. I think that's what they say. Number 5, man, I think my favorite regular season Vince Young game of all time, and one of, if not my absolute favorite regular season Texas football games ever. 2005, Texas at Ohio State.
Ooh,
in the shoe.
Yeah.
Top 5 matchup early in the year. Not VY's best statistical game. Threw a couple of picks. Wasn't accurate from start to finish, but he made some big plays, including the biggest one, the game-winning touchdown pass to Limus Swede.
I love that
in
pass.
The corner of the end zone in the final couple of minutes.
That was a good team victory. You're right. That was one of those ones. Usually, we have so many of those instances where VY just put the team on his back and decided, all right, I'm going to go win this damn thing, including in the national title game. But Yeah, that was a good team victory. Yeah. I remember a lot of guys stepping up and having big moments in that game.
Dude, in the BCS era, you lose that game, who knows what the hell happens, right?
Damn right, yeah.
I mean, every game was so huge. Yep. Every game is still huge in college football, but I don't have to tell y'all, back then, they meant a little bit more. And it's funny, not a great statistical game for Vince.
It wasn't.
He still had 350-plus all-purpose yards and 3 touchdowns. Not too shabby for that guy.
Yeah.
Number 4, top 10 single-game performances for Vince Young during his time as a Texas Longhorn. The other Colorado game from 2005, the regular season matchup.
Oh, yeah, they whipped him.
Yeah, 42-17. And look, Rod, there were people who doubted Vince Young's arm even after he left UT.
Yeah.
Right, that was the biggest question for him going to the league,
whether
or not his arm could translate. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it happened during college, too. Like, people, even in 05, after Vince Young had that great 04 season, and even midway through the 05 season when Texas is a top 2 team in the country and Vince Young's in the Heisman conversation, there are people who are still like, man, can that guy win a game with his arm? Like, is he good enough to beat decent competition with just his arm? He had 3 rushing touchdowns against Colorado, but he was 25 of 29 through the air, 336 passing yards, which was a career high for Vince, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Like, that might have been his best passing performance in a single game at the University of Texas.
Yeah, it's definitely in the conversation. 86% completion percentage. Yeah.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, that's
that was a decent Colorado team. Like, at the time they were ranked, I know Texas stomped them, and then they stomped them again in the Big 12 title game later in the year. But, like, at the time, that was viewed as, like, a quality opponent, and Vince Young just torched him.
Over, like, the early 2000s, Colorado was a team that would compete for Big 12 titles. I know that sounds crazy to say now, but when I played, oh, man. I played.
Well, yeah, they're not in the Big 12 anymore.
I know, so but exactly.
I know what you're saying.
But they don't even compete now for anything. I'm just saying, yeah.
5 total touchdowns for VY, by the way, which tied a career high that game against Colorado in 05 in the regular season. Number 3 now, my top 10 games for number 10, the 05 Oklahoma State game. Texas down 28-9 at one point. They were down 28-12 at halftime.
Not a great passing performance by VY.
Not a great passing performance, but he did run for 267 yards, which was a career high.
Oh,
2 rushing touchdowns as well. Oh. Vince Young had a tackle in that game, Rod B., which means he threw an interception and had to make a tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So not great having to throw a pick, but like his box score was so good in that game that he even recorded a tackle against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, filled up the stat sheet.
47-28 win.
And they were up 28-12. Oklahoma State was.
Yeah.
Right? They were up again.
And then 47-28. So what is that? At one point, it was 28-9, Rod B.
Okay.
So
yeah, I knew it was up. I knew they were up big at one point.
47-28. That'd
be. Wow. That is just nuts.
38 unanswered by Texas?
So back-to-back years.
Yeah.
They had like 70-something unanswered points at one point total.
49 unanswered in 04, and then 38 unanswered in 05.
Okay.
God, Oklahoma State must have hated Vince Young.
Yeah.
Probably still do.
They probably still do because they should have had one of those. One of those they should have had.
Mm-hmm. If not both.
Yeah. No, VY wouldn't be denied, man. I remember that game, too. I said that great before. Is that the one? Which one is the one where he has the pump fake?
That was.
I mix them up.
I think that was that year.
Was it that year? I know. I mix them up because they're both big comebacks. And they both have these big time explosive run plays. I should know this, but I swear they kind of run together a little bit. I'm getting old. I'll figure it out. CBO sent it to us. Don't worry.
He will.
CBO sent
He's
it
probably
to us.
Sent us like 30 highlights already.
Exactly.
Number 2, best individual performances by Vince Young during his time as a Texas Longhorn. The 04 Rose Bowl. I mean, VY made magic happen against Oklahoma State.
Ooh.
He made brilliance happen in Pasadena at that stadium. Against Michigan in 04, 38-37. Shout out Dusty Mangum. The game-winning field goal as time expired to give the Longhorns the win. But VY, 192 rushing yards, 4 rushing touchdowns in that game, which tied a career high.
Mm.
Also, 180 yards through the air, a passing touchdown as well for Vince. Not too shabby. Then, of course, the declaration after the game saying, we'll be back. And sure enough, they were back. Number 1 on the countdown. No debate, no question. The 05 National Championship game. Vince Young's last game as a Longhorn. 30 of 40 through the air, 267 passing yards, 200 rushing yards, 3 rushing touchdowns, including the game winner with less than a minute left on 4th and 5 with the national championship on the line to give Texas its first national title since 1970. That guy set so many records on that day, a lot of which still stand. One of the best, if not the best, individual performances in college football history. That's number 1, no question.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. No question. I want to go back to your number two. Am I wrong to think that was VY's national coming out party?
I don't think you are.
Right? Cause, I mean, we regionally, everybody was really high on VY. We know coming out, one of the highest rated recruits ever, too. But nationally, I want to say because a lot of America was watching that game, you got the two big brands, Michigan, Texas, Blue Bloods going at it. And Michigan was good, too. It's not like Michigan was scrubbed. Michigan was a really good team that year. I wonder, because I think before that, I don't know if there was as much buzz around VY. I think after that, and after watching him dominate in that performance, and they basically kind of go through this, they were just, it's a shootout going back and forth. That might have been the time when nationally people started to recognize how extraordinary his talent was.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right, and I was only 10 years old when that game happened, so yeah. My memory might be fogged, but like when Texas played OU that year, I think a lot of people were looking for something from Vince Young.
And it didn't happen.
And it didn't happen.
Exactly.
They lost 12-0.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people had kind of closed the book on this guy, like, well, is he really that good?
Yeah. People were talking about switching to wide receiver still, remember?
Mm-hmm.
E. Hogan was making that argument at one time.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice going, Abe.
Cold takes.
That is the coldest of cold takes right there around these parts. But yeah, I think a lot of people were like, okay, how good is this guy? And then to do it against an elite team like Michigan in that setting.
Yeah.
I think that was his coming out part.
Jeff Ward brought up a good point, too. He brought up how he thought the Kansas game in 04 was a big game because, in his opinion, kind of, and I think you've hinted at this, too, just about how Kansas wasn't that good then. This is not when Mangino brought them to their zenith when they won a BCS game. He said, I bet Mac would have been fired if they lost that game. And I never thought about that.
Wow.
But when he said, I was like, huh. He was just thinking about how the frustration of not beating Oklahoma, which I got to tell you, at that time, was a big topic of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Can Texas ever beat Oklahoma? And they hadn't done it in a while, right? At 98 when Matt Brown first got there. But we lost in 99. We lost in 2000. We lost in 01, 02, 03. I mean,
yep.
So he's saying at that time, you had already lost Oklahoma. You almost lost Oklahoma State. I don't know. I forgot when that game was. Was Kansas before Oklahoma State or after?
I think after.
It was after.
I think so.
It was after. So you got the Oklahoma State thing. Even though people are happy about it. Like, hey, at one point you were down 35-7. Probably should have lost that game. And then Kansas. You almost lose that game. And he said, honestly, he thinks VY saved not only the dream of him winning a national title, and he thinks he saves Mac Brown's job, potentially.
That's
and I, you know what? I don't disagree with that totally, because I could see if Texas loses that game to Kansas, people giving up on Mac until he decided he's not the guy.
Well,
he can only
win
10 games.
We've seen that happen since Mac. You lose to Kansas, people give up on you pretty quickly.
Yeah, but think about the mounting frustration about, because Oklahoma probably, they're going to BCS games, they're winning Big 12 titles still, Heisman Trophy winners, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Texas fans are looking at their rival, accomplishing a lot more than them, and they're thinking the grass has got to be greener. Never thought about that. And I remember when people still thought, VY's a better wide receiver than a quarterback. I remember those times. I remember those conversations. Don't act like y'all didn't have them. You did.
Yeah.
I was listening to you.
I can claim my youth.
Exactly.
And hide behind that there. I didn't have those conversations. There's no chance that was going on. What I miss, Rod B, I mean, any other memories or moments or highlights from VY's career?
No, you did a good job. You got all the ones I have and some that I forgot about. I mean, we're just talking about VY's career. I just think it's such a marvelous career here at Texas, obviously, but when you get to the NFL, things change. Just go look at his rookie year. I'll just say that because you keep in mind that VY was not drafted to a regime, to a coaching staff that embraced him. They didn't really want him. The owner wanted VY and the coaching staff, Jeff Fisher and Norm Chow, they wanted something else. They wanted more of a pocket passer. And I think if they would have embraced VY a little bit more and been able to adjust their scheme to his skill set, there's no telling what would have happened. Not saying he would have been a Hall of Famer or anything like that, but his rookie year, remember, the Titans start 0-3. Then they put VY in. He goes 8-5 in that stretch, has four fourth quarter comebacks, which led the NFL. They led to rookies, I should say, rookie quarterbacks. He set the record for rookie quarterbacks rushing at the time. I'm sure that has now, of course, been broken several times. And he won Offensive Rookie of the Year. He was there on the precipice of doing something great at the NFL level, but he needed a little help. He didn't help himself. I will throw that out there, too. And VY will be the first to tell you that. But Jeff Fisher, we know now in retrospect, ruined a couple of quarterbacks, or at least tried.
Yeah.
Jared Goff, who later went to a Super Bowl with a better coach. Nick Foles, who was thinking about becoming a priest. Becoming a member of the seminary because he was so frustrated with Jeff Fisher. Uh-huh. And Case Keenum. So I think there's a history now, and we know VY made mistakes. There's a history now of Jeff Fisher and his staff, whoever he picks, for those guys ruining some quarterbacks. And I think if you could have got him in a different situation from the jump, the narrative could have been different about VY. But it is what it is. He still won 31 NFL games, 31-19 as a starter, but more interceptions than touchdowns and below a 60% completion rate. So he could win. He just would find very unconventional ways to do so.
Kerry freaking Collins.
Kerry freaking Collins, man.
Jeff Fisher liked that guy more than Vince Young.
Yeah, he did.
Makes no sense. Yeah, I'm with you. I always wonder what VY's pro career would have been like if he was taken by the Texans number one overall. Or just taken by anybody other than Jeff Fisher.
Yeah.
But we'll never know. We have the memories here.
No doubt.
And they were pretty spectacular. So happy 38th birthday to the great Vince Young. All right, Rod B., what you got on your rant of the day?
Initially, I was very critical of something Urban Meyer did in the draft, but he recently has clarified and tried to bring a little bit of logical thought to his reasoning and rationale as to why he made this draft pick. And now I got to tell you, I've changed my mind. I think I agree with what Urban Meyer did in the draft. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how something that was the brainchild of Urban Meyer is now hitting home in the NFL and also hits home right here at Texas. All of that and more right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite
and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real!
My God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. A lot of people, including myself, were really surprised when Urban Meyer drafted Travis Etienne in the bottom of the first round of the NFL draft. Initially, when he was asked why he drafted Travis Etienne in the back of the first round, he said he drafted him to be a third down back, a third down running back. And everybody's jaw hit the floor because you don't spend first round draft capital on just a third down running back.
Yeah, you shouldn't spend first round draft capital on any running back.
Oh, that's a great point. But these days, you should do, unless they're just like, I'll say a Randy Moss exception.
But yeah,
yes.
Definitely not on a third down back.
Yeah, and I think the blowback and criticism of that coach speak he threw out there and he thought that would suffice for the masses, I think he regretted it because I think the blowback got to be too much because people basically said the same thing you said, BK. You don't spend first round draft capital on running back. Damn sure don't do it on something as specific as just a third down running back. Maybe Urban Meyer doesn't know what the hell he's doing. People are starting to make those whispers now are coming out about Urban Meyer, not only because of that decision, but also remember he had the decision about Jack Doyle, the former Iowa strength and conditioning coach who was dismissed because of, I don't know, just some insensitive comments and things of that nature, and he tried to bring him on. A lot of people believe that he was insensitive toward issues of race. He tried to bring him on as a strength and conditioning coach there with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the blowback was so immense that the tail ended up wagging the dog there. And then you have the Tebow incident. My man Chris Sims even brought it up. There are some people saying that people in the locker room, in the Jacksonville locker room, don't respect that move. And they're losing a little bit of respect for Urban Meyer for making the Tim Tebow move. Like somebody else might deserve that. And by the way, can I just say this sidebar? Man, why can't Tim Tebow just get a shot with Urban Meyer? They're boys. Sometimes your boy brings you on to help you out. It's right. Called nepotism. It runs the world. I don't get what the big deal is.
Runs the world. It sure as hell runs the sports world.
Exactly.
We see it all the time.
I really don't understand. It happens all the time, and now people are really upset by it. I really don't get it. So I'm not just – listen, I am not a Tebow hater. I'm more of a Tebow fan, but I don't understand why people are so upset by this. And I've heard, too – and I got to go back and check it. I heard this from a friend of mine on the inside, so I don't actually know – the what they call vested years of Tim Tebow. That's how many years you've played in the league, where they basically have vested years towards your pension and towards your benefits. And if you have five vested years, I think actually now it's three vested years. It used to be five when I was playing. But when you have three vested years, you get the pension.
You have to wear a vest for 3 years?
No, what they call vested, they mean play a certain amount of games in a year. Like, so you're active, you're on the active roster for, I don't know exactly what is with the new CBA, I will admit that, but you play a certain amount of games, and that's a vested year for you. You played four games, or you were active for five games, vested year, and that year goes towards your pension and benefits.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So,
The speculation is Tim Tebow needs like one more of those years.
That's the speculation. The world on the street is.
Nepotism.
That Tim Tebow may just need like a game or two to get his extra vested year. And that, yes, Urban Meyer, because he wants to thank Tim Tebow for, I don't know, making his damn career potentially. All right. And making him hundreds of millions of dollars there with at the University of Florida. I'd say just an exposure for the university. But still, as a way to pay back Tim Tebow, who couldn't make any money in college. We all agree that's a damn shame. And also, I read somewhere that Tim Tebow has sold more merchandise and jerseys in college than any other modern athlete.
I buy that.
That I heard that was also something that Urban Meyer knows, and that may be why he's like, no, I don't care about the blowback. Tim Tebow made my career one of the greatest college coaching careers of all time, and he brought Florida football potentially two national championships. I know Chris Leak was in there, so don't say that. Mm-hmm. And also a Heisman Trophy winner. I don't give a damn what people say. I'm going to pay him back. I can pay him back by just putting him on the practice squad and then leaving him there for a couple of games and bringing him up for a game or two when nobody gives a damn, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, right? It's not like he's making the 53 right now.
Yeah.
And maybe he's good. I don't know.
You put him on the practice squad, and you tell everybody, no, he's a project. We're going to see. He showed some promise at tight end.
Yeah, they've got like 90-something players on their roster right now.
Exactly.
There's a whole bunch of jabronis out there, and about half those guys aren't going to make the final roster. There's a good chance Tim Tebow is one of those dudes.
Yep.
I don't have that big of an issue with him getting a tryout.
And by the way, it helps ticket sales in Jacksonville. Isn't that where he's from or something?
Yes.
Come on, man.
I know.
Ticket sales. That is what it's all about. Are we trying to put butts in seats?
Hey, the Jags ownership wants to move the team to London. So Urban Meyer is like trying to get Jacksonville fans buy stuff here.
Yeah.
So maybe to raise more money, so Shad Khan, the owner, is like, oh, maybe we do have good fans here.
Ding, 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 ding. There are a lot of conspiracy theories about this Tim Tebow thing. Some people say they're like they live in the same neighborhood, that Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer live in the same neighborhood.
Boy, morally.
They're that.
That's for damn sure.
Yeah, not at all. I did hear that Tim Tebow used to take out Aaron Hernandez, and so I don't know how that goes. But I heard he actually stopped Aaron Hernandez from doing some shady stuff, which is hard to do. All right, so here's the thing. So now I get back on track here. Urban Meyer has specified exactly why he invested first-round draft capital in Travis Etienne. He's saying, no, it wasn't the third down back. That was just a smokescreen. Here's what he says, the real reason. He said, quote, he's the Percy Harvin we're hoping. I mean, those are big shoes. When you say something like that, but you've got Paris Campbell, you've got Curtis Samuel, those types of players. Offensive coordinators loves those kinds of guys who can do multiple things. He went on to say, worst case scenario, you have a running back that's elite with receiver skills. Comparing him to Le'Veon Bell is also something that he's done. He actually, when he was asked about Travis Etienne working out at wide receiver for the rookie minicamp, he went on to say, quote, when I came out here, he brought me into a room. This is Travis Etienne, by the way. So I make sure I get that right. It's Travis Etienne. He said, quote, when I came out here, he brought me into a room, asked me how I felt about it, and I feel great about it. I feel like it's going to help me maximize my opportunity, maximize my skill set. So I feel like coach knows what he's doing. He's doing what's best for the team, and I feel like it's going to work out really well. Okay, end quote. I think, actually, I like this move. Now, in retrospect, okay. I criticize it for being just a third down back move. I like the move, and I'll tell you why, as a football theory guy. Because Urban Meyer's most successful systems have always had this guy. You hear me talking about him on the show. I call them wing backs. Mm-hmm. right? You've heard me talk about these guys. Johnny Rogers, old school Heisman Trophy winner, first wing back. You're talking about a wide receiver with a running back mentality or a running back in a wide receiver body. Hybridism, which is the future of football, in my opinion. And I've talked about how really Urban Meyer brought back the wing back. He's the one that repurposed and repopularized the wing back. And when I was tracking this, and I did a little bit of this research a couple of months ago, because actually I was comparing skill sets of Jordan Whittington and how I think he can be a future wing back. Urban Meyer in 2006 is when he unveils Percy Harvin, right? And he starts utilizing Percy Harvin as a wing back in backfield action, in run game action, also as a wide receiver in the slot, moving him around to try to find the most advantageous matchup. I don't think it's a coincidence. Also, if you go look at, you go track wide receiver rushing yards. You've heard me talk about this, BK. Wide receiver rushing yards in the NFL start to spike around 06, 08. Between 06 and 08, they spike. In 04, 05, not one receiver had more than 100 rushing yards. In 06, three. Like, oh, what happened in 06? Oh, what happened? The first guy to start really experimenting with was Brian Schottenheimer randomly. Brian Schottenheimer with the New York Jets, the J-E-T-S, Jets, using Brad Smith, who was from Missouri quarterback.
Yeah.
Antoine Randall for the Pittsburgh Steelers and Javon Walker were your three wide receivers who had over 100 rushing yards at the time. And then you fast forward to 2008, and that's when Percy Harvin, he really had his coming out party for the Florida Gators, and you saw, you know, Urban Meyer really weaponize his hybrid skill set. You had three wide receivers in 2008 in the NFL with over 100 rushing yards, and DeSean Jackson actually had 96, so he was 4 yards shy. Because we've always talked about how there's a trickle-up theory to the NFL, and Andy Reid has all but confirmed it, saying, oh, no, we are always stealing really creative concepts from college, and it's been going back as far as, you know, he can remember. And I think you start looking at the wing back, as I call it, when Urban Meyer started utilizing Percy Harvin in that way, I think it inspired guys like Brian Schottenheimer. I think it inspired Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll, who is now the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, was at the time in 2008 the offensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns. And you know who led the NFL in wide receiver rushing yards for 2 years straight in 2008 and 2009?
Cribbs.
Josh Cribbs.
Yeah.
Who's basically just a great return man, and they need to figure out a way to give him the ball. You know what? To hell with trying to get him to run a route and get open. Let's just hand the damn ball off.
Because he couldn't do that.
Exactly. He couldn't get open that way, but he's an explosive player. Just give him the ball and hand it off to him. So in 2009, Josh Cribbs was first in wide receiver rushing yards. Brad Smith, Brian Schottenheimer was second. Those names are important. All right, so in 2010, Darrell Bevell, who is now the offensive coordinator for Jacksonville with Urban Meyer. Ding, 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 ding. And also, how about this? You like this? Brian Schottenheimer, who also it was inspired by Percy Harvin's college, the college stats and his prolific hybrid skill set. He also is on the Urban Meyer staff.
Really?
He's a pass game coordinator and quarterbacks coach.
Wow.
Putting it together, people. Football theory. So these are all fans of Urban Meyer. Also, they know how to utilize that hybrid skill set, right? Urban Meyer's done his research. Who are the guys who basically popularized this in the NFL? It was Brian Daboll. Well, you ain't got access to him because he's with the Buffalo Bills. But Brian Schottenheimer did it. And with Brad Smith, Brad Smith finished third in wide receiver rushing yards in 2006. He finished fifth in 07, second in 08, second in 09, first in 2010. He finished second in 2011. So Brian Schottenheimer, even up until the time he left, which I think he left the Jets in 2011, actually. And then he joined St. Louis. What happens in St. Louis?
They lose their team.
They do. But another hybrid defender, and I'll get to that in a second, because Percy Harvin is drafted. Right, so Percy Harvin gets drafted by the Minnesota Vikings in the first round, and guess who's the offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings when they draft Percy Harvin? Darrell Bevell, who's now the OC for Jacksonville and for Urban Meyer. Kenny putting all these pieces together. They fit very nicely together. So fast forward, Percy Harvin, 2011, leads the NFL in wide receiver rushing yards, right? That true hybrid skill set. Daryl Bevel actually moves on. Daryl Bevel goes from Minnesota to Seattle.
Seattle.
And remember, Seattle brought in Percy Harvin a couple of times too.
Yeah.
Why? Because they had a guy, Daryl Bevel, there who really wanted to utilize that type of skill set. So you keep fast-forwarding through this, this football theory, right, trying to backtrack all this. And Tavon Austin is probably the next really elite hybrid skill set player that comes out, and he's drafted by St. Louis. Well, who's in St. Louis at the time? It's Brian Schottenheimer. He's there. When they draft him, boom, Brian Schottenheimer takes advantage of that skill set. Later on, St. Louis actually gets a new head coach, Sean McVay. And now, currently, since Sean McVay became the head coach, no team in the NFL has utilized wide receiver rushing plays as well as the LA Rams. Nobody's done it better. It's been something they've been able to utilize every year Sean McVay's been there, and it's been with Robert Woods mostly. Robert Woods has like almost like 400 rushing yards already as a player. So you're starting to see it. Now Kyle Shanahan is also a guy who loves the wingback. Debo Samuel is his interpretation of a wingback. But now everybody's got one of these guys. Joe Brady had one with Curtis Samuel. Tyreek Hill is that for Kansas City and Andy Reid. Kellen Moore's even got one with Tony Pollard. That's going to be kind of his version of a wingback. They called him a what do they call him? They call him something else. They call it a it's almost something derogatory.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, web.
Web back. Thank you. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Oh, yeah,
you
got to
be careful there, man.
Yes, yes, yes.
I don't even like saying
So my point is that Urban Meyer, that's why he's got Brian Schottenheimer there with him. That's why now he's got Daryl Bevel there with him. He wants to turn Travis Etienne into Percy Harvin. There's a lot of evidence he can do that. But this is the guy that he's the grandfather, if you will, one of the founding fathers of this wing back concept. And I think if anybody can make it work, Urban Meyer can.
It's great stuff, man. Mm-hmm. Way to connect the dots, a little football theory coming your way during Rod's Rant of the Day here on the Triple Option with RBKD. We'll see if Travis Etienne can be that guy for Urban Meyer and Jacksonville. The Texans will find that out week one of the NFL's regular season. We'll keep the NFL conversation going. Coming up next, we have a reported trade proposal involving Aaron Rodgers. We'll discuss whether or not it makes sense. And I also want to ask Rod B the question, if Aaron Rodgers was on the Houston Texans, how many games could the Texans win in 2021? It's next. How 80s is this, Rod B?
Do I love this song?
Do you?
Yes. I don't know who sings it. I know that it is from one of my favorite cheesy movies from the 80s, Mannequin. And all you 80s babies out there know it. This is Mannequin. I love this. This is a great movie from the 80s. Basically, the premise is that there was a curse on this Egyptian princess or something back in the day, and then she becomes a mannequin as a result of the curse, and that mannequin is passed down to generation, and she ends up in a store, like in a, I don't know, some type of store, like some big name store, some shopping store, and then basically true love can bring her back to life, and I forget the guy that is supposed to be her true love, the love interest. I forget. Nothing's gonna stop us now. And if this world runs out of lovers, we'll still have each other. Nothing's gonna stop us. I know this song. Oh, it's crazy. That is freaky that this song came on. I love this song, actually.
Well, first of all, that movie sounds terrible.
It is.
I mean, I'd never heard of that movie before a minute ago, and now I wish I hadn't heard of that movie.
Look up Mannequin, man.
No, I'm not going to. That sounds awful.
Oh, what's the woman from Sex and the City? She's hot. Smoking hot back then, but
Courtney Cox?
No, Sex in the City, Courtney Cox.
Jennifer Hewitt Love.
Oh, okay. Now we just suit it up.
There's a Love Hewitt Jennifer.
No, I'll find it. No. Damn it. I can't believe I'm supposed to know this. But yeah, it took place in a department store and I don't know.
Oh God.
I'm sorry. Oh. But you the one who played that song, man. It brought me back. Kim Cattrall is the
I was close.
The main attraction, I should say.
So the author of this song, just so you know, Jefferson Starship.
Oh, they're actually well known back then. Yeah, Jefferson Starship is well known.
Nothing's gonna stop us now. The title of this
one. It's a good jam, man. It's a good quality song from the '80s.
Man, I did not think you would know this one.
Oh, dude. Oh, I watched that movie probably 100 times.
I saw you nodding your head while we started playing this, and I'm like, does he have any idea what's going on here?
Yeah, I grew up with that damn movie, man. I grew up watching that movie. It's one of the few movies we had on VHS, and I watched it over and over again. I don't know why. We bought Mannequin as a black family, but we had to have it.
Dude, I'd rather, I mean, the way you laid out that movie, I think I'd rather watch mannequins do absolutely nothing at a mall for 2 hours instead of watch the movie you described.
It's possible I did a terrible job of describing the movie, too. All right. That's also possible.
Oh, man. All right. What about this, Rod B? Aaron Rodgers.
All right.
He's been the most talked about player in the NFL over the last couple of weeks.
No doubt.
I think Deshaun Watson might be a fan of Aaron Rodgers because, well, since the Aaron Rodgers trade speculation has picked up, the Deshaun Watson conversation has gone down.
Great point.
We're trying to figure out if Aaron Rodgers is going to be traded. We know he's disgruntled. Everybody knows at this point his relationship with the Green Bay Packers has soured. And there are a few teams reportedly in the mix for Aaron Rodgers if, in fact, the Packers decide that they are willing to or have to trade AR-12. One of those teams is the Denver Broncos. Matter of fact, there were tweets on draft night that said the Broncos were close to a deal to acquire Aaron Rodgers. And that was a couple of weeks ago, and we still have a few months left in this offseason, so maybe there's time for something to get worked out between Green Bay and Denver. But Albert Breer, I wish Breer was his last name.
That'd be awesome.
Albert Breer, who covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated, kind of tweeted out a potential framework for an Aaron Rodgers trade between the Packers and the Broncos. And I want to hear from you, Rod, if you think this makes sense, or if this is maybe too much for Denver to be giving up to acquire Aaron Rodgers. So the proposed trade, Denver would get Aaron Rodgers and a fourth-round pick in exchange for Drew Lock, defensive end Bradley Chubb, former top-five pick.
Wow.
Guard Dalton Risner, former second-round pick.
K-State.
Mm-hmm. Three first-round picks and a second-round pick.
Wow.
So Green Bay would get all of that. Drew Lock, Bradley Chubb, Dalton Risner, three firsts,
so essentially
and a
four, because Bradley Chubb's a first-round pick, too.
Basically four.
So basically four first-round picks.
In exchange for Aaron Rodgers and a fourth. Is that too much for Denver to give up? I mean, I know it feels like Denver's a quarterback away from being a legit Super Bowl contender, but, man, you're mortgaging a whole hell of a lot for a quarterback who's 37 years young.
And how many years do I have him under contract?
I think he's got three years left.
3 years? Okay. 3 years is enough time to get it done. That's a lot. That's a lot, man. I'm not going to lie. That's a lot. But there's talk out there that Aaron Rodgers bought the TB12 book, the TB12 method. Yes.
It's on now.
And that his belief now is that he wants to play as long as possible. And he has actually even adopted, some of the TB12 methods, and he's using them for himself. So if he wants to play five more years, six more years, yeah, I mean, he's going to make you a Super Bowl contender. You got great wide receivers. You got to go up against Kansas City twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too much?
It's too much. It's too much.
It is too much.
I'm the biggest Aaron Rodgers fan in the world. Now, I hate him as a player because I'm a Cowboys fan, and I've seen him torture my favorite team time and time again, but I think Aaron Rodgers is the stud of all studs. That's a lot, man. I mean, if you take out Bradley Chubb from that deal, then I'm listening. I think Bradley Chubb is a huge part of why the Broncos are a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
And if you take out Bradley Chubb, you're still giving up a hell of a lot. Three first, a second, a quarterback, and a plug-and-play starting offensive lineman. Like, I think there are people out there who would argue that that is too much for Aaron Rodgers. But I'm not giving basically four first-round picks.
That's what it is.
And two starting caliber players and a second in exchange for a pretty petulant guy who might decide that he hates your organization after 1 year.
Exactly. He may decide he wants to retire anyway because I don't like it here.
Yeah. Denver's not what I thought it was. Can't handle the altitude.
Yep. And you just mortgage your future.
But yeah. Doesn't want to talk to John Elway anymore. I don't know. It's Aaron Rodgers. Like, you feel like anything could be on the table with that guy personality-wise. He doesn't talk to his own family after all.
I know.
So him turning sour on Denver after a year doesn't seem too far-fetched.
I like your Bradley Chubb take is right on the money in terms of maybe that's where you draw the line and you can give up everything else because that's what makes your defense have the potential to be elite. You can replicate what you did when you had DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller coming off the edge, and you won a Super Bowl that way. You got Bradley Chubb and a healthy Von Miller coming off the edge. That's your elite pass rush.
Yeah.
And you've been stockpiling DBs. We watched the draft this year, but they've been stockpiling DBs through free agents. They got one of the deepest defensive backfields in the NFL. So I'm with you. I don't know if I'd give up Bradley Chubb because I know Aaron Rodgers makes my offense unique and elite, I should say, but I also want my defense to have that ability and that's what Chubb gives you.
I agree. Yeah. So that feels like
a lot. Yeah,
I don't think Denver would agree to something like that. But Albert Breer, once again, who covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated, throwing that out there as a potential framework for an Aaron Rodgers to Denver trade. I don't know if those discussions are happening just yet, but a lot more to unfold with the Aaron Rodgers off season. It's the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner. When we return, we'll get back to Texas football. Three things Steve Sarkisian must do in year one for this to be a success. We'll debate next.